And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 667. We're here to talk panic meter, as I know my DMs are flooded with people. I know this guest probably has his DMs flooded with people and many more. So we're just going to have some fun, kind of more so walking you off the ledge, per se, and realizing it's April 18th as we record right now. We haven't even had 3 full weeks of baseball yet. And but then there might be a few players that that pop out as a little concern to be had. So we'll talk about that and probably more through our rabbit hole of discussion. First, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, and my guest, you can find his work over at Sports Ethos. He does a lot of great stuff over there, of course. He does his daily podcast, his writing content. He did rankings. He's done a lot this year. So you got all that good stuff. He's on Twitter at JoeOrico99. Joe, how we doing, man?
It's great to be back with you, Bubba. It's always fun to join you on this show. And when you come on my show, we talk quite a lot over these last few months, but it's always great getting to talk baseball with you, my friend.
Yep, most definitely. It's always good. It's fun watching you grow from where you started to where you are now, and then just having you on the show a lot, or me on your show, and having some fun that way. So it's good to chit chat with you. I kind of gave the cliff notes of what you have going on, so plug everything you got going on these days, so people that they should know you, but if they don't for some reason, they can find you.
I'm still relatively new to this whole thing. I haven't been around for that long, so I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of your listeners still don't know who I am. But I host a daily podcast over at Sports Ethos. It's called Fantasy MLB Today. Go Monday through Friday. Occasionally, I'll do the Friday show on Saturday, just so I have the Friday night to talk about. And I don't like to go too long without recording. I'm addicted to podcasting. I think like you are as well. So the two-day break, I kind of get itchy behind the mic. So you get 5 podcasts a week from me. I usually write about 1 article a week over at sportsethos.com. And then I tweet a ton of stuff. I usually put out nightly notes. I'll talk about the most added and dropped players of the day. Tons of stuff over there at JoeOrico99. But yeah, just pumping out as much content as we possibly can right now. People are absolutely itching for it this time of year.
Yes, they are. It's actually really good to see. And it'll, the natural progression, it'll die down as the season goes on, as football shows up. But it is great to see the excitement for baseball and fantasy baseball, and it feels a little more than usual. So that's good in that regard. But yeah, let's just get at it. Let's have some fun here, because Joe, and like I messaged Joe yesterday when we were trying, I'm like, I'll get you an outline later, but I kind of want to like make this a fans episode. Let's like get names, thinking, okay, we'll get maybe 15, 20 names. Like, we'll have some fun with this. You guys are crazy. And it's in a good way. It's a respectful crazy, but like you brought some last night, and then Joe quote tweeted it, and then just the floodgates opened up, and it just showed, I guess, a lot of similar names, which is fine, but it just showed the, I guess, panic in the air these days. So we'll talk about the popular ones, like I said, and then kind of go elsewhere. But the first name that was tweeted to us and was mentioned many times on that thread, Nolan Jones. People are panicking about Nolan Jones of the Colorado Rockies right now, Joe. When you look at Nolan Jones, sitting a .171, 1 homer, 2 steals, 38.5% strikeout rate. And when you look at Nolan Jones, what are we thinking on this one? Like, and you can always throw in, like, if you add, you drop, if there's a format dependent, whatever you want in these discussions. But what's your thoughts on Nolan Jones right now?
I'm worried. I mean, he was somebody that I was really fading. I didn't end up with any shares. You know, it's way too early to fully know. There could be a couple of week stretch where he's at Coors Field and he ends up hitting 6 home runs and stealing 8 bases. And then we're all talking about like, okay, buy Nolan Jones, because it is just still, again, I want to just, you know, on the first player, I want to stress this point on all of them really, but it's still super, super early. And we have no idea what the stat lines are going to look like in August, but the early returns are awful for Nolan Jones. I think at this point, it's not somebody I'd be dropping just because you spent such a high draft pick to get him. And I've already seen it on Yahoo. I look a lot at Yahoo's roster rates, and he's down to 93%, which isn't a whole lot, but he was at 99, 100. Those are people who are already letting go of their fourth round pick at this time of the year. So I wouldn't be dropping him. What I think is maybe the best thing to do, because I was already kind of concerned coming into the year, the stolen base total from last year was just kind of a random massive number. He had 20 when he'd never even had double digits, or he had double digits once in the minors and it was 10. I thought that was kind of just a crazy high number. He obviously had the really high BABIP, so I was concerned already. I'm concerned now. I think you wait till he has a really hot week or so at Coors. Like I said, maybe he hits 2, 3, 4 home runs, and then you try and sell him for what you paid on draft day and maybe see if you can get back a fourth round player, because I really do worry going forward. You're not going to want to start him away from home most of the time. And we've seen just early on in the year when they've been away from Colorado for a lot of it, how ugly it can get. So I wasn't in before the season. I haven't been encouraged now. I think the best thing to do is just wait for a little hot stretch and try and get out from under it personally.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, does it suck? Yes. There's some things to look at and maybe to keep an eye on going forward. Like, his ground ball rate's 52.5%. That's 10% higher than last year. And that'll affect what people talked about all offseason, that, you know, he had such a massive BABIP last year at 401. He can't sustain that. Well, that's down to 282. And a lot of that could be due to the ground ball rates. That's what's lowered his barrel rates. Like, there's just it kind of goes together when you see the ground ball. Like, once I saw the barrel rate drop over to the ground ball rate, it kind of checks out. That those are the things that make sense at a quick glance. But I'm with you, Joe. It's like, A, you drafted him where you drafted him, so you're not giving up yet. B, you're going to want him in Coors because it literally will take one series in Coors and you'll be like, oh, wow. This is early in the season. He's now batting .285 with three home runs, and things are a little bit back to normal. So, yeah, definitely get that one. But I just hold my breath for now. I got Britton Doyle out there, who's great for defense. He's providing probably better than expected in the outfield, but he's taken up one spot. Chris Bryant's on the IL. Stop me if you've heard that before. But so Sean Bouchard got called up, but, you know, who? So really, Nolan Jones isn't going anywhere in the Rockies lineup, and as long as he's getting regular at bats to work things out, I'd go with that. Out of your stolen base points, I'm with you. Like, he's never done this before, so that was kind of a surprise, but I still think there's a 20-25 home run bat there that could hit you 270 and be productive. It's just to what extent, and that was always the concern. So hold, maybe bench, as Joe said. Like, I'm doing a lot of benching these days on certain players. I've cut a few. We'll get to some of them actually on this list, but a lot of benching. It's too early to give up on high draft picks. I guess before we go on, Joe, I should just kind of get a point of reference from you. I've heard other people mention it. How long do you usually give your players before you say, screw it, I'm done, I'm out? Like, some people, like, the common one's Memorial Day, which makes sense in a roundabout way. And a lot of it's also dependent on probably where they were drafted per se. But do you have like a kind of a rough plan of attack when it comes to finally saying, okay, it's time to move on?
There's not an exact formula, but the more I think about it, maybe there should be. Like, let's use like a Julio, for example, who we're going to get to. Even if he's struggling for the first 3 months of the year, he's never going to be a cut. It's just based on where you drafted him, based on the upside. Even if he has a horrible first 3 months, like, think about like Trey Turner last year. He was dreadful and you still weren't cutting him. So with those early round picks, they have a long, long leash. Probably even honestly inside of the top like 3 or 4 rounds, those guys are probably like honestly never cuts unless it gets really dire. Once you get into like the 50 to maybe 150 range of ADP of where you drafted guys, then I probably would say the month of April is what I would give them. And if it looks really, really dreadful, then you might think about moving on. Once it gets to the late round guys, though, guys that you drafted in round, let's say 12 and beyond, even maybe around 10 and beyond, if they're stinking up the joint for the first 3 weeks of the season and the underlying data sucks as well, then I don't really have a problem moving on from them, especially if they're reserve round bench players. Because I'm really guilty of this myself in a lot of leagues. I'll take those shots on the upside guys rounds 24 through 30. And you trust your process. You don't want to give up on them in the first couple weeks of the season because you're thinking, okay, I spent 6 months researching player X, player Y, player Z, and I don't want to cut bait 2 weeks into the season. But if they're really looking terrible, I think you can justify it, especially if it's like, you know, a Jared Jones you picked up a couple weeks ago and you're cutting your 28th rounder. Like, you can strike gold this time of year. So late round guys, you got to be really quick to cut bait, I think.
Yep, I'm with you. That's like the whole, I know I'm not alone in this conversation, but I mentioned it a lot, even in my live draft shows and other stuff, that like my last 5 to 10 picks, I'm planning on cutting within a week or two. Like, that's just part of the game. Your top picks, you got to wait for it. Like, you mentioned J-Rod. He's on the list. It's probably the extent of our conversation on J-Rod right here. You're going to keep playing him. Like, we talked about benching Nolan Jones. If you really want to bench J-Rod, go for it. But he's one of those talents that can literally go bonkers at any moment, and that's going to really hurt watching that on your bench. So J-Rod, it'd be like putting Ronald Acuna on your bench, who just went deep the other day. You just don't do it. Like, unless there's like a clear sign that something's wrong. J-Rod should be in your lineup, and there should be no way to take him out, basically. It should be like that Yahoo. Yahoo does have a feature, a can't cut list for, like, your top two or three picks. There should be a can't sit on your bench list. And, like, yeah. J-Rod and these guys, they should be kind of locked into your lineup, barring an injury.
So, yeah, I mean, J-Rod struggled last year mightily, and then there was a stretch of, I think it was July or August, where he batted like 430 or something ridiculous. So you don't want to even sit him for, even in a daily league, one day you sit in J-Rod, that could be two homers and two steals. It could happen at any moment.
Yep, totally with you on that one. So we'll go back to it here. Xander Bogaerts, honestly, I was surprised to see people struggle. I guess I haven't paid that much attention to Bogaerts, but he continues to lead off every day for the San Diego Padres. And when you dig into his numbers, it's, you know, 200 is not great. One homer, one steal at 14 runs scored, striking out less than 15%. I'm not worried about Xander Bogaerts unless I'm missing something.
No, I'm not worried at all. This is like the low BABIP really does stick out to me. 330 BABIP for his career, and literally every season it's very, very consistent. 320, 360, 330, 330, 330. And this year he's at 227 to start, so that's something that really sticks out. Like you said, he's leading off every day in front of Tatis and Machado and those guys, so he's probably still going to get you close to 100 runs roughly. I think he's maybe like 17 and 15, something like that, in terms of homers and steals. I think you'll still get what you paid for. I don't see any real reason to panic on Xander.
Nope, I'm with you there. I wouldn't even bench Xander, honestly, because that team can get clicking at any moment, unless you somehow have a really good middle infield replacement, which there's not many of them. So Xander's probably locked into your lineup. Another guy that's locked into your lineup is Randy Arozarena, at least in me. You know, he had a double thing. I thought he stole another bag for some reason. He's got two homers, four steals. He's only hitting .171, and that's got people panicking. Dude's like a .250 hitter. But the power speed's what I care about. That's still there right now. Is there anything you're seeing that makes you want to panic with Randy Arozarena?
No, the strikeouts and walks look good. Like you said, like two homers and four steals through 18 games. You know, if people are wanting to sit him, you're going to miss out on a lot of production. Nine runs, six ribbies. It hasn't been great, but it's been serviceable. Again, it's a BABIP kind of thing. He's a .326 career BABIP, and he has a .210 BABIP this year, .208 BABIP, and that's led to the .174 batting average. 56 WRC plus. It looks ugly, but again, it's such a small sample size. You're talking about a third round pick, a guy who's been a 2020 guy and actually a 2030 guy just as recently as a year ago. I'm not panicking. If people are wanting to get rid of Randy Arozarena on the cheap, then absolutely go for it. But if I'm the owner, if I'm the manager who has him, there's no way I'm getting rid of him for anything less than what I paid for.
And that's a great point by Joe right there. A lot of people have, like, Randy was mentioned a few times. Like, a lot of these guys are mentioned multiple times today, which tells you maybe in your league someone's panicking about them. So this could be a buy low show at the same time in reality. Like, if Nolan Jones, like, I'd rather have Randy than Nolan Jones, but, you know, they were drafted similarly. There's a lot of names here where you could maybe get a little, you know, action there to build up your team as well. Wyatt Langford, this one's kind of interesting. Like, you drafted him high enough, so you're not probably dropping the guy. Or you're not dropping the guy. I was going to say probably you're not dropping Wyatt Langford. But let's face it, we're seeing this with rookies. You know, he's hitting .254, which is good, but no steals, no homers. But he's not striking out a ton. Like, it feels like it's coming, Joe, and people seem to, like, back up a few steps.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Wyatt Langford, I guess it depends when you drafted. Because if you drafted really early on and you paid a .250 or .270 pick, or maybe even past .300 if you drafted early enough, maybe you would then at that point say you would cut him. But even then, like, I can't justify it. Then it would be more palatable maybe. But a lot of people draft at the end of March. You're paying close to a top 100 pick. Most of the time you're paying a top 100 pick for him. And it hasn't been terrible or anything, like .254. It's not like he's hitting .105 and he's, you know, below the Mendoza line stinking it up. Like, he's been fine. The speed thing, I think it goes back to the team. They don't steal a lot as a team. So despite him being really quick, we're probably looking at maybe 12 steals or something like that. I know a lot of people were thinking he's just going to be the next in the line of Julio and Bobby Witt and Corbin Carroll and just bring you this, like, first round value. I don't know if he's going to be quite that, but I think you're still looking at like a 20 and 12, 20 and 15 with good batting average. He's batting third or fourth most days for the reigning World Series champion. So, you know, he's very secure in that lineup. I think they trust him. I don't have any reason to panic on Wyatt Langford really at all.
Yep. I'm with you there. Like, Victor Scott, funny, not mentioned on any tweets. Yeah, there'd be a panic, but Wyatt Langford, I'm pretty good on as well. Andrew Vaughn, this is kind of one of those where I feel like saying, you drafted a White Sox player, so this is kind of where your world lies. But at the same time, he's only hitting .167. That's a little disappointing. Obviously, no power yet. You're probably hoping for 20 home runs when you drafted him. Vaughn's a guy that he's one of the first ones we're talking about where, depending on format, I could see a drop in play here potentially where things are. So what's your thoughts on Andrew Vaughn? Because I'm just, with that team context, there's not a lot to like here.
Yeah, I don't think he's that great, really. The team, I mean, this team is so cursed. It's awful. I feel for our friend Mike Carter, because it was going to be a rough year going in, and then they get the holy trinity of injuries there to their top three players. It's awful. And I think with Vaughn, you know, I had this conversation with Gray Albright a couple weeks ago about Vinny Pasquantino and about shallow formats and about 10 and 12 team leagues. First base only guys are pretty expendable there. You need to be pretty damn good in most leagues. 10, 12 team leagues, one first baseman is going to be on the roster. I don't know if Andrew Vaughn was cutting it. We're thinking about like Pasquantino. This was right before he went off, so we're going to take some credit there for lighting the fire under Vinny mm-hmm. P. But with Andrew Vaughn, there's no speed. There's okay batting average, terrible counting stats, maybe 20 homers. NFBC players kind of, I think, need to hold on to him. 15 team leagues, like you're getting regular playing time. It's tough to cut him in a 15 teamer, but a lot of you guys listening are probably in a 10 team points league, a 12 team points league, or head to head. I think it's time to move on if you have him. You didn't pay a lot for him anyway, so he's one of those guys, like we mentioned earlier, the draft cost wasn't so much that you're really thinking about that sunk cost type of deal. Just get rid of him. There's really, the upside is fairly limited, I think, at this point.
Yeah, no, 100% with you. Deep formats, there's a lot to like with Mono's first base outfield. There was that flexibility, you know, and the team wasn't even this bad. They were still not great, but not this bad. Get a 255 average, 15 and 20 homers. Like, okay, this works. This is playable, but yeah, where he's at now, it's just not going to get any better anytime soon. And he'll hit better probably average-wise, but maybe 15 homers, no speeds, like you said. So I'm with you on that one. Father Time, again, April 18th, so we shouldn't like overreact. But Father Time might be playing a role with Mr. Paul Goldschmidt these days. After kind of a down season last year, still good, 25 homers, 11 steals, 268, but down for Goldie standards. Yeah. It's off to a really slow start in 2024. He's hitting 182, one home run, zero steals, you know, 0.045 ISO. That's telling you not a lot of power in Goldie's game to start things off. So when you're looking at Goldie's profile, my goodness, just saw his barrel and hard hit rate as well. It's brutal, Joe. It's brutal. So how are we, what are we thinking on Goldie these days?
He's not somebody that I would be cutting just because I think there's still a fairly high floor. And there is a chance, honestly, that this could be like his Jose Abreu type season from last year where the bottom really just does kind of fall out. I don't know that we're quite there yet. If you just look at the strikeout and walk numbers, like those are still really good. It's not like the plate discipline's really fallen off. He's striking out a bit more than usual, but nothing like, not a crazy high number. And again, 18 games, I don't want to read too much into it. He's another guy with a really low batting average on balls in play. 256 compared to his usual 346 for his career. And even just last year, it was 327. So I don't think he's a 182 hitter. I think he's still probably going to end up hitting about 260. Maybe 20 homers. Maybe the speed falls off a little bit. I could see that. And maybe he's a single digit speed guy. And he's not the MVP player from a couple of years ago. But I don't think there's any real move if you have him right now. If you're selling him, you're getting pennies on the dollar. If you drafted him, I think your move is to just hold and hope that he turns it around. He's not a cut. You drafted him inside the top 100. And again, it's April 18th. You're not cutting anybody in the top 100 unless there's something really drastic. I think you just got to give him some time and hope that he turns it around and hope that the fall off isn't too severe.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to hope it's not too bad. Like if you have a way to bench him for a little while, I'd be cool with that when it comes to Goldie. But it's basically 12 team and deeper, you're not getting rid of Goldie. 10 team, you might have something out there, but it's still tough to dish him in reality. But just keep a close eye. He could be one of those where if the Abreu comp is good, that's the first thing I thought of because Abreu's horrific right now. Surprisingly, no one mentioned him. So they must have given up on him is what that comes down to. But last year, Abreu did this, like you said, and then he came back and put together actually a formidable season. So that's good. So we'll see with Goldie. I was kind of out entering the season because I was just nervous from what we saw last year. But we'll see. Time will tell. 36 years old, might be time to think about that retirement with Goldschmidt. CES, Christian Encarnacion Strand. This one I've been hearing for a few weeks now. 192, two homers, 12 ribbies, though. He continues to hit like third or fourth almost every game in Cincinnati, which automatically keeps him in every lineup for me pretty much right out the gate. And what I want to also say is people are going to look at the full season stats. Over the last seven games, he's had multiple hits in 4 out of 7. So that's pretty promising to me as well. I think the kid's going to be fine. I say kid because he's a kid. But it's a slow start indeed. But besides Ellie, most guys on that team are off to a slow start. So what are your thoughts on CES?
Yeah, he's got 4 multi-hit games out of his last 6. One thing I really want to see is him walk more. He has one walk through his first 17 games and 73 plate appearances. Actually, 76 plate appearances. That's not great. But again, it's really small sample size. He's usually been a 7-8% kind of walk guy, maybe 6-7%. So I'm not really concerned from that standpoint. I think the power's legit. That ballpark is excellent. You probably get a couple of steals from your first baseman as well. Not a lot, but maybe he gives you 3, 4, 5 steals. Good batting average. He's a good buy low candidate, I think. There's actually people who've dropped him. He's another guy like ESPN, or excuse me, Yahoo. He's 82%. You know, he's another guy who was above 90 to start the year. So people have started to cut bait. I think that he's worth a pickup in most leagues if he's available.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on CES. I am not worried at all. Am I frustrated? Sure, but am I worried? Not at all. He's going to put up a monster summer, I have a feeling, when it gets nice and warm in Cincinnati. Gleyber Torres, a lot of nervous Nellies on Gleyber Torres here, who's had a slow start. I'm not going to deny that. He's hitting 208, no homers, 3 steals. Strikeout rates are back to 21-22 type seasons compared to when it lowered in 2023, which could be a bit surprising. Barrel rates, hard hit rates are low, not great. Now it looks like ground ball rates, fine. Actually hitting more fly balls, 0% home run to fly ball compared to the last 2 years. I'm still optimistic on Gleyber. I think there's a long ways to go here. Are you seeing anything different on Gleyber? What's your thoughts?
I'm a little bit concerned, even just looking at, I just saw him this past weekend in Toronto. I watched Toronto more closely than probably the other teams, being a Blue Jay fan, and he was not great looking. He was swinging at some pretty ugly pitches. Hasn't hit a home run yet. I'm not overly concerned, but I think if I was going to go in and redo my projections that I did in the preseason, I would lower him across the board just ever so slightly, 25 homers down to 22. The stolen bases will probably be fine, but I think that batting average might be at a little bit of a risk. It did jump up last year to a career high, 273, if those strikeouts do come back, and come back and then some. If he has a 23% strikeout rate, that would be the highest since his rookie year. So at that point, we're probably looking at a 240 to 250 batting average, 20 homers, 10 steals. It's just a little bit less than I was expecting. He's not somebody that I'd be, selling or dropping or anything like that. But I am a little bit concerned here, a little bit concerned.
Yeah, that's understandable. I'm optimistic. I just got to, this is the other fun part. I liked Gleyber a lot entering the season. So it's, it's another problem most of us have when it comes to evaluating these early situations. But I'm waiting a little longer because even Judge is off to a horrific start. Stanton, pretty outside of Volpe, there's not a whole lot going on in that offense right now. So pretty bleak stuff there in the Bronx to start things out. Some other bleak stuff, Corbin Carroll hitting 225 on the air, finally hit a home run, which is good. He has 8 steals, though, only striking out 7% of the time. Yeah. There's a lot of things to really like when you see Corbin Carroll's profile. He's barreling the ball pretty close to last year. Not hard hit rate stinks. But there to me, there's a lot of things to like looking at Corbin Carroll. I'm not nervous at all. I was slightly nervous about the shoulder for the power outfit. Not going to deny that. But I kind of thought that going into the year. Everything else he's doing right now, I think we're cool and things will be better. But you can tell me I'm wrong. So what's your thoughts on Corbin Carroll?
No, I mean, I do worry a little bit about the power aspect. Maybe he doesn't get the 25 this year. Maybe the shoulder is bothering him and we only see 18 to 20 homers. But I think the rest of the profile is still pretty safe. He's another guy with an uncharacteristically low BABIP to start the year. He's stolen 8 bases. The walks to strikeouts is really impressive. 12 walks to 6 strikeouts through his first 18 games. It kind of jumps off the page at you. It's Juan Soto-esque type of numbers there. Yep. You don't expect to see double the walk rate over the strikeout, regardless of sample size. But, he's a good walk rate guy historically in the minors. It was off the charts. Even last year was 9% in his rookie season. I think we're still looking at a very, very safe player here. If you are concerned about Corbin Carroll, though, I think you could probably still get back your draft price for him. You could still if you are somebody who is I've seen enough. I don't want him on my team anymore. I want to get rid of him. you could probably still get a first rounder back for him because of the production that he's given you. 8 stolen bases, 11 runs scored. So if that's the route you want to go, you could probably do it, but I don't have any real concern about him, especially if you drafted later on when people are concerned. And he actually did get pushed to the second round in some cases in 12 teamers. So especially if you got a second round value there, I don't have any concern at all.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. It's like the power I was already thinking wouldn't be great to begin with. I think he'll still get you close to 15 to 20 homers when all things are said and done. He's going to run like crazy, though. He's already, like I said, already got 8 steals. He's hitting. The average will come back with that kind of plate discipline. He'll score a ton of runs in that offense. So what you drafted is what you're pretty much going to get. If you had higher expectations than that, that's more of a probably you thing than a what reality thing on that one. All right, I'm just going to keep this one simple. I'll leave it for you, Alejandro Kirk. The floor is yours, Joe, because he's your guy, but it's been rough is all I'll say.
I'm going to have to eat some humble pie pretty soon on Alejandro Kirk. Oh, my God. What happened? What?
Yeah, there was this guy from like 3 years ago that looked like the next best like hitting catcher alive.
I was so invested. And again, like if anybody follows my content, like I've had a Roy Halladay banner as my Twitter thing forever. I'm a Toronto guy. I've lived in Toronto my whole life. I'm a huge Blue Jay fan. So maybe I was a little bit blinded by my love of Kirk and slightly heavy set baseball players. But that being said, the numbers were so, so good in 2022. Last year, they kind of fell off. But even this year, the projections were pretty okay coming into the season. Now, it's just looked awful, though. Like, he is a ground ball machine. There is no power. There's obviously no speed. He's never stolen a base. He's never going to. The batting average was what he really had going for him. A late asset this season. This was my thought process. You're getting a guy who is... You know, considering Danny Jansen and his fragility, and he's already had time on the injured list this start the season, I figured he's good for 110 games or so, and you're getting good batting average from beyond pick 250 ADP, 270 type of batting average from your catcher, double-digit homers, decent offense, enough said. But the offense sucks. The team didn't do anything to put a good offense in place. And even though there's decent pieces, the lineup is never constructed properly. You'll have a guy who's on a little hot streak, and then he sits down. It's really just been a mismanaged team. Now Kirk has to deal with Jansen being back, a couple of guys in the mix there. I think if you're in a one-catcher league and you're still hoping for Kirk to do something, you should probably move on. Unless you're talking like a 30-team one-catcher league, I think you can move on in 10 and 12 teamers. And if you're an NFBC player, 15-team, two-catcher league, I'm holding on because what else, what are you dropping him for, really? There's nothing else there. And you're still probably going to get, a decent enough batting average and maybe 250. But my expectations of him are, absolutely shot to hell. Like, when we go into next season with rankings, assuming that he keeps up this relative pace, like, I don't even know if he'll be a top 30 catcher for me. The floor has fallen out from him. It's awful. It's been terrible to watch, but this is where we are. Sorry, I kind of rambled there. I got emotional.
No, with the floor was yours. Floor was yours. I know how this goes with players we invested in. That's why I wanted to give you the floor, because I agree with what we saw, what you were thinking with him. Like there was a lot to like there. I was always worried as long as Jansen's healthy, that's a big if, as you know, as a Jays fan, then there's going to be a platoon. That's just how they're going to work. But yeah, you get DH at bats and they sign Justin Turner, and just kind of kept working against Kirk's time. But the skills, I wasn't as nervous about. Now the skills look horrific, like you mentioned. 15 teams, I could see it, like you said. 12 teams, I could see it being a window. 12-team two-catcher, you could probably almost, like, just for fun, would you rather have Austin Wells or Kirk?
Probably Wells right now, honestly.
Let me think top of my head, because Wells would be a good one to look at. Patrick Bailey.
Bailey, probably, yeah. Would you take Connor Wong?
I take Connor Wong. That's kind of where I'm at. Again, 12s, there might be a drop there too.
Yeah.
And that's just it's just reality of the situation. If Jansen gets hurt again, you could probably go right back and pick him up because plate appearances will be there. So I have to kind of wait and see how it goes.
Yeah, it's rough. It's tough times in Toronto. It's going to be a long year.
Yeah, I think you have a good fan here because they mentioned a few Jays, so we'll go through these. But Bo Bichette, one homer, two steals, almost to his five from last year, .227 average. You're going to mention BABIP. It's dropped 100 points from last year, 15% K rate. I'm not nervous about Bichette, but you watch him a lot more than I do. Should we be nervous about Bo Bichette?
No, I'm actually not really worried at all. People don't like to look at batting average, and granted, it's a flawed stat, but he's a 300 career hitter over 2,400 plate appearances. That's generally what he is. I think even if it's like a 280, you know, 285 type of guy. That's probably about the floor, and all the projections agree. The lowest projection for him in batting average rest of season is the Bat X, 284. He's actually stealing a little bit more. We saw it in spring training. He stole, I think, 3, maybe 4 bases in spring. He's already got 2 now through the first 17 games. And hell, after only stealing 5 all of last season, I'll take 2 through 17 games. You're probably looking at like a 25-10 guy with a 280 batting average who's batting third for a not great lineup, but that part of the lineup is not bad. So I think that his runs and RBIs are pretty stable. You know, people pointed to last year as a down year for him, but you know, on a per game basis, he was fine. You know, he batted 306, 20 homers. It was really the steals, but the steals coming back, that was the huge part of his game that disappeared. Like, he was a first round player a couple of years ago because of the stolen bases. I don't think he's going to be 25 steals, but you know, 12 to 15 goes a long, long way there. So yeah, I'm not really worried at all about Bo Bichette.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. We can go quickly on the next one. Kevin Gausman, I have zero concerns after watching that velo come back. I'm unless you watched him, should we be concerned?
No, I'm not really worried. The command has not quite been there. He's not fully up to speed yet. That's the thing. Like, he got started in the last week of March, so his body right now is probably still in like mid to late March mode compared to where he usually is. I worry a little bit about him having shoulder fatigue so early into the season. It's not something that I love to see, but the velo he got up, he threw a pitch that was 98 yesterday. I nearly had a heart attack in the Bronx last week when he threw a fastball that was 85. Yeah. Yep. I nearly fainted, but yeah. I think that was just the cold weather and him still ramping up. So yeah, Gausman I think is fine. If people are looking at that pretty ugly ERA and want to get rid of him,
go get him. Yep. No, that's how I was when I saw that 85. I'm like, ah, oh, Jesus, I took all those cheap shares. This is gonna suck. And then like last 2 starts ago, things got a little better. And then yesterday I was like, yeah, we're good. Things are good. The command, that'll come with time. I'm good there.
Yeah.
Josh Hader, this is one of those where I was concerned all preseason with. Back-to-back games don't go well for him or at all for him. He has 1 save, ratios through the roof already. He's going to have a lot of great moments, but he's going to have a lot of make you want to sweat and wonder what you were doing moments. What's your thoughts on Josh Hader?
I think he's okay. I mean, he has an 8.31 ERA, which is like comically bad, but this the ERA estimators are all in the low twos, mid twos, you know, 285 FIP, 201 XFIP. Strikeouts and walks are generally Josh Hader-esque right now, 37-10 on the strikeout and walk rates. I don't really think there's anything to be overly concerned about. I mean, that's probably because I don't have any shares either, so I'm not terribly concerned because I just didn't want to pay a third round, maybe sometimes even a second round price for him. Maybe, you know, third, fourth, second, wherever he was going, it was too pricey for me. I was kind of concerned about, you know, the strength of the relievers behind him in Houston, and if he does continue to struggle, I think it would need to be a lot of struggling.
Yeah.
But they have Presley and they have Abreu, who are both very, very talented arms there. I think Abreu especially. It's a possibility that as the season goes on, if he's really dreadful, he could lose his job. But I think that it would take a lot for that to happen.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's like there is a great backup system, support system for Hader, but they paid him that money, and it's going to take a lot, I think, to get him out of there. But I wasn't paying the premium for him this year, and if you did, you're not doing anything about it. You're sitting there on it and taking what you get.
Yep.
Another very popular name. Maybe more popular than Nolan. So far, Jones has been the most popular. Jordan Walker might be more right next to Nolan Jones on our tweet list here. Jordan Walker sitting 180 this year in 17 games. No homers, no steals. 26% K rate, most since 2021 in single A. I was always concerned with Walker to begin with, but like I understood the love, but that's like the concern was there. He's barely in the ball, almost 11%, which is good. Like that's a positive for sure. But when you're looking at Jordan Walker here, Joe, what are your thoughts? Because you know Victor Scott should go away here pretty soon, and Tommy Edman's not coming back anytime soon. So Walker's got playing time if that's the concern.
I bought in pretty heavily. I got to be honest. I bought into the whole post hype thing. I thought his struggles were overplayed last year. He batted 276, 16 homers, 7 steals. I have a bunch of shares. So I am, you know, this goes back to what you said earlier. Sometimes with players we're invested in, sometimes maybe we're overly optimistic, but, you know, I'm still fairly encouraged overall here. Like you said, I don't think there's going to be much concern about playing time. I don't like that he's batting 8th recently. That's not going to do anybody any favors, but I think the talent is still there, and over time he will figure it out. in a 10-team league, 12-team league, especially in those three outfielder leagues versus five, you probably don't need to hold on to him. Like, specifically a 10-team, three outfielder league, I don't think that he's really necessary. But I think, you know, four or five outfielder league or 12-team league, I think a lot of the time I'm still going to give him the benefit of the doubt just because I believe in the underlying skills. And I do believe in that lineup as a whole. I know they've struggled, but I still think they're pretty solid unit offensively that will figure it out. It's generally the same team from last year that was, I think, the 10th or 11th best offense throughout the course of the season. Their struggles were kind of overplayed. It was the pitching, and I think people kind of, you know, used that to kind of shit on the team as a whole, but it's just, I think they're really not as bad as people make them out to be. And Walker's just having some early season struggles. I'm really not overly concerned, but in shallow formats, I can see yourself moving on.
Yeah, I 100% agree with all of that. Like, shallow formats, you probably could. I try to hold if you can in 12 and deepers, but I get it in a 12. There's outfield's one position where you can find streamable assets for sure. But as you were talking, I was just looking deeper. Like, the BABIP's a massive drop, but I mentioned the barrel rate's up. His ground ball rate went up a bit. His fly ball rate up a bit. He's not hitting line drives, which will play into the batting average when it comes to Jordan Walker. So, like, in his plate discipline, it's pretty similar, if not kind of better than last year. Yeah. So there's just a few factors. I think he needs to tweak a little more, and he's probably close. And it'd be one of those you wouldn't be surprised if it kind of broke out at some point in time. It's just, how long do you want to have? Like, he should be benched on your teams if you can. Yeah. But he's going to have a hot streak, it feels like, at some point in time this season. So I'm with you 100% on that one. A guy you wanted to talk about, and a few people did bring him up today, Max Fried. Max Fried, you know, had the injury last year that cost him a lot of time, but still finished the season looking good, which was a positive. It got my attention. I somehow didn't get a lot of shares for someone that likes Max Fried a lot. And at the moment, I'm kind of happy about that, but I was bummed at one point. 7.71 ERA in his first four starts, 16 innings, but a 4.4 xFIP, you know, not great, but a lot better than 7.71. When you look at Max Fried, he's walking the world right now without striking out anybody. So what are you thinking on Max Fried?
I hate to say it as somebody with a bunch of shares in leagues where I can't trade him on the NFBC, but I think that you probably should sell for what you can right now, considering the underlying forearm issue, considering how awful it has looked so far. I'm not overly optimistic, really. I'm not full-blown 10 to 10 red alarm panic, but it's really been awful what we've seen so far. And I think it's just that underlying injury. You know, I did a show in the off season with Eno and Nick, and Eno was rhyming off stats about forearm injuries and how often they recur, and it's like 80% of the time or something. So I feel like he's just a ticking time bomb. As much as I hate to say that and put that out there, I don't think this is going to end terribly well. He's somebody who's just been so consistent for his entire career. It's hard to think that this is just going to be what he's doing unless there is, in fact, an injury there. And the 15% strikeout rate, like, he's never been a massive, massive strikeout guy, but 15%. And the walks, I think, are the massive thing. Like, his command has always been excellent. 6% walk rate for his career. That's been doubled this year nearly. I'm pretty concerned. If you're able to sell him and get back a top 50, 60, 70 type of SP right now, not top 70 SP, top 70 like overall type of player, I think I'd be doing it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I'm looking at his numbers overall, and
brutal.
And it's like just velocities, like you mentioned, and other things. It's been a rough go, to say the least. The fastball's doing nothing to help him right now. And wow, looking at this, it's real rough, all things considered, with one Max Fried right now. But like you said, you can't drop him. Hopefully bench him or trade him if you can, but and hope it gets better, but not looking great. Mikel Garcia, everyone was pumped by the first like five games he had, and trust me, I love Mikel Garcia, big fan. I was touting him like crazy, but now it's three homers, three steals, and a 184 batting average. And he's working his way out of the leadoff role here pretty soon, it feels like. You know, one thing people liked last year was the hard hit rate and everything. Well, he's got a 14% barrel, which is better than 4% last year. Still a 46.4% hard hit rate. So it feels like things aren't that far away from Mikel Garcia. But again, I could be totally wrong. So what are you seeing when you look at Mikel Garcia?
Yeah, I think that he is another ofer away from losing that spot at the top of the order, yeah, probably. It's been awful. And he's actually been the topic of some cheeky back and forth on fantasy baseball Twitter the last couple of days. People victory lapping in both directions, actually, about him. It's been kind of funny. I don't think that there's really we can really pass judgment one way or another yet. I mean, he's given you 3 homers and 3 steals, 12 ribbies and 7 runs already. That's really good production, even with the 164 batting average, which I know is terrible. I don't think that he is somebody that I would necessarily be cutting in most cases. He's a third base shortstop guy, at least on Yahoo. I'm not sure if he has that on NFBC. He might. I'm not sure if it's both on NFBC or not. But in Yahoo, third base and shortstop, I think that even if he's not at the top of the order there, he could still be a guy who provides you double-digit homers. The power does seem to be better this season. He hit 4 homers in 123 games last year. He's already got 3. And those came all within the first, I think it was right like the first gate. 5 games or something like that.
Yep.
I think that there's double digit power, maybe 20 stolen bases. And, you know, again, I don't want to just point to BABIP every single time here, but 170 when he's a career 325 guy. I mean, I know small sample, but even in the minors, 350, 340, 320 kind of BABIPs, these numbers will stabilize. It's still a time of year where you got to exercise patience. If you want to cut him in a 10-teamer, I don't think that's going to come back to bite you. In a 15-teamer, if people drop him this Sunday in NFBC Fab Leagues, I think they're probably going to regret it in 15s.
Yep. No, I'm with you. There's still a lot to like with him. And like I said, and you've said, is like the hard hit rate's better, the barrel rate's better, the home runs are up. Because last year, like we're like, okay, the hard hit, he hits it well. If he can just barrel the ball more, elevate the ball more, he'll get power. Well, he's got that. And last year, he had a 10% home run to fly. It's only 14.3. It's not good. It's a difference, don't get me wrong, but not massive. But he's got a 10% increase in fly balls and a 2% decrease in, or 1.5% decrease in ground balls. So what that's telling me with the struggles here and why the BABIP's also lower is he's flying out a lot. Like, he's getting more home runs because of that, but he's flying out a lot. A heavy ground ball guy will have a better, BABIP. So if he's hitting more line drives and ground balls instead of ground balls and fly balls, BABIP will change, batting average will change. But at the same time, if he's barreling the ball more and hitting with more hard contact, he should hit more home runs. So it's kind of like, what do you want from Mikel Garcia? Do you want like 260 and 15 to 20 homers? Or do you want, you know, 280 and 100 runs scored and 45 stolen bases? That's kind of where we're at right now when it comes to Mikel Garcia. And I'm still in the wait and see mode. He's going to go down in the order. That's coming any day. I'm going to get an underdog update with a lineup, and it's going to say like Mikel Garcia batting 8th. I'm ready for that here pretty soon. But 10 teams, you're fine. 12 teams and deeper, I'm still crossing my fingers and holding out hope with Mr. Garcia. Byron Buxton, he's still healthy as of April 18th. So that is a start in the right direction for the 30-year-old. He's played 17 games. He's, you know, almost a quarter of a way to last year's season total. But hitting 193, no homers, no steals, 36% strikeout rate, sub 2% walk rate. They're in a 3% barrel rate, 42% hard hit rate. There's a lot of things pointing to, oh no, Joe. So what's your thoughts on Byron Buxton?
22 strikeouts and 1 walk through 17 games. That's atrocious. He does have outfield eligibility now in NFBC leagues. He started off as util only. I wasn't sure we'd get there at all. The fact that we're there already is promising. You got to hold your breath with him, right? It's always something. And sometimes these guys are able to spike a healthy year, and maybe he will. Like, look what Mike Trout's doing. Everybody's written off Mike Trout as the guy who can't stay healthy. And I mean, again, I shouldn't even be saying these kind of things, but Mike Trout looks like a whole new person this year. Not to say that Byron Buxton couldn't do that at some point. It does not seem like that this is going to be the year. No homers, no steals. The projections are still pretty lofty. The bat, ATC, they're thinking, I mean, ATC in particular, 27 and 11 they're projecting from him. I'll take the under. I will take the under on that. I think in most cases, you can probably cut him. You know, I have a couple shares in DCs where I was thinking maybe he gets outfield eligibility. You know, it's kind of like a late round pick. That was the upside of him this year, is that he was literally free. He was, I can't even remember how cheap it was, like, you know, 30th round kind of player, like nothing. But again, it didn't cost you anything. You can kind of cut your losses here. I think there's definitely a higher upside player in almost every league at this point. Maybe in 15s, if you want to hold on, I can understand it. But I think, you know, most of the time you can let him go.
Yep, 12 teams and shallower, he's definitely worth a cut to me. Because the other concerning factor, well, he wasn't an expensive pick this year. So these are the guys you move on from a lot easier. But second, you know, you mentioned the 22 strikeouts in 17 games. His O swing's up 9%, but his O contact's down 5%. That's not a ratio you want to see, folks. He usually has about a 14 to 15% swinging strike rate. It's up to 21% this year. There's just a lot of factors not pointing in the right direction. Could he change these things? Sure, definitely could change. But, yeah, I wouldn't be stomaching this one because at the same time, the second he probably changes it, you already sucked up two more bad weeks, then he probably, you know, gets hurt. So that's where just double backfires on Buxton. So I'm with you. I'd try to move on if we could. All right, we already talked CES. Let's go to another Cincinnati Red here. Let's talk Jonathan India, who, you know, draft season, we didn't know if he'd play regularly. Now he's playing every day due to injuries, but hitting .159 with no homers and two steals. He is walking a ton, which is great. So he's getting on in that regard. But as a whole, Joe, it's dreadful at second base. So it's kind of like the old Coors Field adage now with Great American. Do we keep Jonathan just because of the ballpark, or do we move on from this situation right now?
I think you could probably move on. I don't know that there's that many second base, middle infield options if you drafted him, that there, you know, there's not many great options to move on to. I think it will get better. The walks have been phenomenal. I have him in tout, and those I'm racking up the OBP there. Yeah. And so I haven't really actually felt it as badly because that's the main league where I've been starting him. But yeah, 159 is dreadful. It might be a Great American factor as well, but I do love the fact that you get half your games in that ballpark. I still think he can be close to a 20, if not a 20 plus home run guy. He hit 21 as a rookie, 17 of them last year in 119 games. So I think 20 is reasonable to expect. Double digit speed, decent enough lineup around him, even though they've lost some pieces, it's still pretty solid. So I think generally speaking, I'm still moving on. Like a lot of guys we've mentioned, if it's a 10-team league and there's a really hot pickup available, I wouldn't be like holding out for a top 50 season from Jonathan India or anything. Like I mentioned Jared Jones earlier, if a player, like, he's probably gone in most of your leagues, but a player of that nature who's really truly broken out this year, if they're available, I wouldn't say Jonathan India is a must hold over them. But I think in a lot of cases, I'm giving him a bit more time still.
Yeah, I was looking at, you know, the underlying metrics for India and like his ground ball rates, his contact rates, a lot of those things are kind of similar to previous years. So maybe he's not that far off. His line drive rate's actually up 10%. And that's something I've learned to appreciate more in recent years is, you know, a guy is a ground ball hitter, he's a fly ball hitter. You can kind of count on that more often than not outside of a major shift. But line drives is a good indicator of potential batting average because line drives more often than not lead to a hit. And his line drive rates jumped 10%. So the fact he's not hitting for average tells you there might be a lot of atom balls in those situations, which it'll just a drain of everything. But if he's doing that consistently, then it'll start working in his favor. So I could see holding Jonathan if you can, but 12 teams in shallower, you have some questions. You can make some decisions in that one. Yeah. Parker Meadows got the day off the other day, hit a home run on Tuesday, sat again. He's in a platoon now this week. This week he's been platooned. A lefty on the mound, he sat. He's walking a ton, but he's also striking out way too much. It's been a disastrous start. I actually dropped Parker Meadows in some OCs and 12-team leagues this past week. Maybe I was ahead of myself there and shouldn't have. We'll see. What's your thoughts on Parker Meadows? Because it's a young player that looks very lost at the moment.
Man, I was so bought in spring. My last couple of leagues that I drafted of the year, I bought into him. He was leading off. He looked fantastic. I was tweeting about him all. It seemed like every day in my recaps, he was at the top of them because I try to go from not necessarily best to worst in the recap, but, you know, the top performances get prioritized. He was at the top of a lot of those tweets. Today he was absent from the lineup against Jack Leiter, a right-handed pitcher. So
yeah, not even what? A platoon.
What? But I thought he'd be a strong side platoon. He's sitting versus a righty today. Like, what the hell is going on? He went from the top of the order to now a platoon bat batting eighth, maybe not even playing against the strong side.
That's not good.
It's really ugly stuff. I think that you can move on. I think, you know, where I have him, I cut him. And of course, you know, the daily lineup league where I have him, I cut him in the day after he hits the home run. That's the way it works. But I think in most leagues, you know, he's only an 8% of Yahoo rosters at this point. Those are more shallow leagues. But for the 8% of you, if any of you are still listening, holding out hope, I'm not terribly optimistic. I'd be just as optimistic in Austin Meadows at this point or close to it. It's looking pretty rough.
That's a good one. That's good. All right, let's go to everyone's favorite. Let's hold till he gets catcher eligibility and draft day guy, Henry Davis. This has been rough. He's got catcher eligibility now. That's good. But 173, no power, no speed. Great hit tool in the minors. People are optimistic. Even last year, though, he only hit .213 over 62 games, 255 plate appearances. Hasn't seemed to adjust much this season. There's even rumblings that he might find his way to AAA here pretty soon. We'll see. But yeah, I think Henry Davis is a drop if you got other catchers.
If I had told you, Bubba, 6 weeks ago that Joey Bart could potentially be replacing Henry Davis, you would have told me to sober up.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have thought it. But Joey Bart's got concussion syndrome.
You heard how it happened, right? You heard that? Did you hear how it happened?
No, what happened?
Oh my God! So Monday, he's catching a bullpen during batting practice, and a batting practice home run hit him in the head. That's how it happened. That's like the most Joey Bart thing ever. He's finally hitting the baseball, and now he gets hit in the head by a BP home run.
That's terrible. I feel bad for him.
Yeah, but I felt horrible when I heard that. I'm like, God.
Man. He's just finally getting it going. You know, a couple of homers. I don't know. Grandal's back now. I'm not sure how that's going to factor into the equation, but I think in most cases you're dropping Henry Davis. It's been awful. Like, the catcher eligibility with outfield is really nice. If he was playing a lot in the outfield, then sure, but he hasn't played at all in the outfield this year. So that's kind of the main benefit of the catcher eligible outfield guy, you know, with Dalton Varsho, Melendez type from last year. But if he's catching and just playing like regular catching duties or even splitting with Grandal, I mean, he has to do quite a bit for you there, especially in one catcher leagues. There's no reason to hold on in one catcher leagues. And I think even two catcher leagues at this point, like, yeah, the upside is nice. You get some steals from a catcher potentially, but it's looked awful. And I think you can move on in most cases. 12 teamers for sure. Maybe 15s you hold on. But even then, like you said, he might get demoted.
Yeah, 15s is the only one, but that's tough. I'm with you. It's very, very tough at that point in time. So we'll have to kind of wait and see on that one. Nick Castellanos, here is a fun one here, because Casty kind of bounced back last year and people got optimistic about Nick Castellanos and were pretty excited. But then this year he's off to another rough start. 159 average, no power, no speed. How are we feeling on the Casty, man, who I always have a tough time quitting, but man, 2% barrel rate is not ideal. What are we thinking here?
His ISO is literally 000.
Whew.
It's incredibly bad.
Not good.
But, you know, he's walking a little bit more than last year. He's striking out a little bit less if we're looking for positives. That lineup as a whole has just really not been up to scratch, but I think it's just a matter of time until they get going. Schwarber hit a couple dingers yesterday. I think that Turner might have as well hit one. They're going to get going, and I think it's only a matter of time until we're getting generally what we expected out of him. Last year might have been the last like great season from him, because I think we kind of even underrated his season. It was pretty much a 30 homer, 100 ribby season with a double digit steals and a 270 average. He was amazing. I think you're probably looking at 23 homers, 24 homers, a few steals, decent batting average, good counting stats. I really would advise against dropping him. I think that there's probably not going to be anybody with that same kind of upside, even if it's not quite, you know, prime Nick Castellanos anymore. There's a lot to really like still, and I don't think you should be moving on yet in any format.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not moving on at all. I'm not even benching him probably. I'm just keeping that train rolling because it's close. It feels close, at least with him. This is a quick one. Jose Ramirez.
I'm not worried at all about him. No. I don't even know why. Surprised to see him. Yeah, I was surprised to see him. He stole a base today, which I'm glad to see. I think he's fine.
Yeah. Jesus Luzardo. Some people are panicking. I'm not yet. Maybe I should be. But for me, it's like, okay, he's not dominating. 7.65 ERA, obviously not great. But he's still striking dudes out, not to the extent of the last 2 years. Walks are up. It's just one of those, maybe I'm missing something. I have to dig in deeper on Jesus Luzardo. Have you seen anything that stands out to you to maybe get concerned with Mr. Luzardo?
No, the velo looks fine. You know, his strand rate's only 58%, which is really, really bad. I think that he's generally going to be okay. He's probably pretty firmly in the buy low bucket for me right now. I don't see anything below the surface that's, you know, really worrying. I haven't dug like super, super deep, but just, you know, looking at the scores like I do every day, watching as much of it as I can. It's so hard to watch every single game every day. And you can't do it. If anybody tells you they watch every game, they're lying to you. You do what you can. I try and watch what I can. From what I've seen, he looks not great, but nothing to be overly concerned about really either.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like, if you want to bench him for a few weeks, that's fine. But it's like I mentioned with Bloomfield and some others, like Brandon Fott's a guy that's got some warts, but still good. I bench him in some. I start him in others. It's kind of one of those deals. With as bad as pitching is, I'll take all the Lizardo shares I can get right now. As long as that arm's healthy, I'm on that train going forward. Colt Keith, this is a popular name because people are very optimistic about a guy that's never played in the big leagues before this season because he got a contract deal. That's fun and all, but a 197 average, no homers, one steal, not striking out a ton, which is good for an MLB debut, in my opinion. But as a whole, things are not great in Colt Keith's world. 51% ground ball rate is going to make things difficult. So what are you thinking with Colt Keith? Because, well, I'll wait. What are you thinking on Colt Keith?
I think he's a pretty easy cut in most cases, honestly. I don't think there's really a hell of a lot here. Even like the most rosy projections coming into the year had him as being like a fringy kind of guy at like maybe what, 12 homers, 3-4 steals, 250 batting average. Like, I think he was kind of fringy to begin with. He has not looked great. I mean, he's not being overpowered necessarily. Like, the strikeouts are actually lower than they were in the minor league so far. But I just don't think there's a hell of a lot there in that lineup. Still, even though they brought the fences in Detroit, it's still not a great park to hit in. It's just not a situation I'm that interested in. Are you interested in him still? Are you cutting him?
Nope. I'd have him gone probably a couple weeks ago. Like, there's just not a lot that he's showing me. And if he figures it out, kudos. But I'm not seeing a ton with him at this point in time. I'm concerned. I think he's another guy that might find AAA pretty soon to get his mind right in this scenario. All right, Joe Musgrove is a guy I've just been out of ever since the injuries last year that he, quote-unquote, tried to pitch through, and then he gets blown up in spring to top things off. And to me, like, there's been a couple glimpses where there's some optimism I kind of understand a little bit, but as a whole, he's walking more guys. He's not striking out guys. I am not a Joe Musgrove guy. What do you think?
Yeah, the shoulder problem is really worrisome. I didn't have any shares coming into the season. And I'm very glad at this point. Like, I don't think it'll always be quite this bad, but, you know, it's probably not a great comp, but I think it's like a Shane Bieber-esque type of trajectory for him at this point. We're starting with the shoulder problems and we're seeing decline across the board. Velocity is not quite there. The strikeout rate's going down, walks going up. It's ugly. He's another guy kind of in the Max Fried boat right now where I'd be selling for what you can. If you can get roughly what you paid on draft day, or even if it's like a round or two, or you're losing value on him there, I think I'd be doing it. It's pretty awful stuff so far. He's given up nearly a 400 BABIP, which definitely isn't helping him, but that underlying injury, I think, is still there, and I think it's still bothering him. Whether they say it or not, I think it's still there.
Yep, no, I'm 100% with you. I'm very, very concerned with what Joe Musgrove has going on. Nico Hoerner, no homers, more importantly, no steals. He has 13 runs scored, which is good, hitting 246. You'd expect more there. Underlying stats suggest he should be hitting better than this. But as a whole, this is kind of who Nico is outside of the steals. Sarah Sanchez did mention, I heard her on her podcast recently, saying like no one's running on the Cubs as a team. They're not running, which is concerning. But if Nico's not running, you're in big trouble. You're not dropping Nico Hoerner, but I'd be kind of concerned. At the same time, I expect things to get better. What about you?
The speed was the only reason to pay the price you paid for him. That was the only thing, and if that's not there, then it's big time to be concerned. I mentioned this on the show. I forget which one or where it was or when it was even. That's the nature of you kind of just forget. But I said, like, if Nico Hoerner hit 3 home runs this year, it wouldn't be that shocking. You know, the last couple of years it was 10 and 9, but there was a couple of years before that where it was – I remember when he hit that first home run in 2022, and it was like a big event because he hadn't hit one in so long. There's not really a lot of power there. That offense is missing Seiya Suzuki for hopefully not long, because that sucks that he's out. And Bellinger has not looked great either. So, I mean, when you look at his struggles and the team around him, I'm just really, really concerned. I don't know that he's a drop necessarily. Again, kind of that sunken cost thing. You paid like a 5th rounder for him. It'd be really, really, sometimes even a 4th. It would be really tough to cut him already. I think I'd give him more time, but you're not getting what you paid for. I'd be very confident to plant that flag to say that he is going to fall very short of returning draft day value, but I don't think he's a cut either.
Yeah, you can't cut him. That's just one of those you can't do, because if they decide to start running, he's a guy that could steal 6 a week at times pretty easily. Yeah. And because I think the batting average comes up, and that will also open the door. You mentioned he's walking a ton. You just knew when you drafted him, he wasn't going to hit homers. So, like, this is who he is. You need him to hit for average and score and steal bases. So that's where the concern lies, as Joe is saying. Yandy Diaz, this is rough. Hitting 211 so far this season. Like, you talk BABIP drop. Holy shnikes. Things are that's a big one. 367 to 238. That's a monster. But what's also impressive, a near 60% ground ball rate. We're back. And we kind of saw this in the second half of last year with Yandy Diaz. So you expect a better batting average because that's just what he does. but the lack of power doesn't surprise me as much. What about you?
Yeah, I'm not overly concerned. I think the power was something where people were very, very torn on whether or not this was going to carry over. And then the first game of the season, he hits a home run and people are thinking, all right, it's a 25-30 home run year. I think that, you know, some of the underlying metrics showed us that last year was probably going to be the career year in terms of power. 22 was about as much as you can hope for. Maybe he can get to 20 if he runs hot for a few weeks. But I think you're probably looking at like 15 homers. I think you're mostly going to get what you paid for there still. I think the batting average will come up. You mentioned the BABIP, but, you know, again, we're looking at 2,500 plate appearances of a 290 batting average. That's who he is, right? There's nothing that's really changed at this point. You know, you're going to get about 140 games of a 280 batting average, good lineup around him. You're probably not getting any steals, but I think you're generally getting what you paid for, minus a few homers from last year. Not somebody that I would be overly concerned about or cutting really anywhere.
Yep, no, he's pretty much who he is, and that's what people have to accept. He's not the power guy that some thought he'd be.
Yeah.
All right, we're actually getting farther than I thought here, so we'll just power through here until the end. Alex Bregman, he's kind of letting people down, hitting 250, no homers, one steal. Like, for me, when I look at it, plate discipline-wise, walk, strikeout, still doing his thing, ground ball rate, fly ball rate, like, there's not a ton. He's actually hitting for harder contact right now. He's never been the dude that went off the charts during the bouncy ball era, and that's why he goes cheaper in drafts. So I think he's fine. Like, I'm not worried about him, but I guess some people are. What about you?
I don't know that he's going to get quite the 25 homers. I think you're probably like around 20, but I'm not really concerned about anything I'm seeing here. I think he's pretty fine. I'm kind of surprised to see people that concerned about him, honestly. I think it was a bit of a slow start. He's generally a fairly slow starter from what I remember. It's just not something to get concerned about in that lineup. When you're surrounded by Alvarez and Tucker and Altuve, things are going to sort themselves out. 100 runs, 100 ribbies is very much in play. You're not getting any steals anymore, probably, although he does have one. So you might get a couple, but I think he's the same guy, you know, shave a couple homers off. Pretty much the same thing as Diaz, you know, same guy essentially, but maybe shave a couple dingers off of what you're expecting.
Yep, I think 18 to 20 homers, maybe five steals, but you get your runs, RBIs, and you hit for average. Like, he's going to be just fine, I think, in that regard. J-Rod, we're going to walk right past that one, and that was mentioned quite a few times, surprisingly. And let's go to Luis Castillo. Castillo pitched really well in his last outing, two earned runs, 9 Ks. He's had 7 or more Ks in 3 straight starts, but he also had 4 earned runs in his first 3 starts. So there's a little bit of good, a little bit of bad with Castillo. But, man, like a 5.82 ERA, a 2.83 xFIP in his first 4 starts. I don't know about you, but I'm not overly concerned. Is anything concerning you with Luis Castillo?
No, nothing really here. I think he's fine. The walks are better than they actually usually are here. He's allowing a 3.37 batting average, which is just crazy. But a 4.46 BABIP is just... Nah. Absurd. It's an absurd number, and I think you can point pretty much all of his problems to that. He's one of the better buy low candidates at this point. You know, a lot of people, and I see this a lot in my home league, people will see the season ranking number that their fantasy app gives them, Yahoo, ESPN, or whatever. And if you look at Luis Castillo, just pulling up my home league on Yahoo right now, he is ranked as the 861st ranked player on the season. That's absolutely brutal. 5.82 ERA. A lot of people do not focus as much on this as you and I, Bubba, or the people listening to a fantasy baseball podcast. You might just be a casual player, see that he's doing terrible things, and you might be able to buy him very low. So that's a prime buy low candidate right there.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Go get some Castillo if someone's willing to shop him. Castillo, Gospin, go knock on some doors, people, and see what you can do. Spencer Torkelson's a fun one here. He's hitting 211, no homers. You didn't think it would be much steals, but he's only striking out 21%. Which you're like, okay, cool, that works. He only has one barrel and a 31% hard hit rate. That's concerning. I think part of this is, though, looking at his like batted ball profile, 57.4% fly ball rate, which is up basically 11% from last year. He seems like he's just getting under it so much that it's just taking away everything. That's obviously not a recipe for success in Detroit. Maybe I'm too optimistic, though. What are your thoughts on Torque?
Yeah, I think that, you know, he's still probably going to get you close to 30 homers. I just don't know that it's going to come with a hell of a lot else. It might be like 25 homers to go along with 75 runs and 70 RBI, batting, you know, 220, 230, no steals. You could do better, I think, in a 10-teamer. Unfortunately, like, he'll turn it on at some point. But again, 10-team league, 12-team league, where there's no corner, no, even if there is a corner spot, honestly, I don't know if he's cutting it. I think in those type of leagues, you can really churn and burn on the waiver wire. And I think Torkelson is somebody who's expendable. In a 15-teamer, I'm still waiting. But I think in 12s and in shallower, you can unfortunately probably cut him.
Yep, I'm with you on that. That's why it always was weird to me when, like, I liked Torque's upside, but like on draft day when you had Torque, Casas, and there's one other of the first basemans, we were like, there's Naylor or something. It was always weird seeing him in that grouping with those guys because like, I liked him, but he should have been like, would you rather rest the season, Andrew Vaughn or Torkelson?
Torkelson.
Yeah.
I'd say Torkelson. The White Sox are just such a dumpster fire. I want nothing to do with anything there.
All right. And Andrés Muñoz was mentioned a ton in this thread. And I think it's more so for the fact that he keeps pitching the seventh and eighth innings in high leverage roles and not giving the closer. Folks, yeah, that's what they do there. That's just the reality. Like Paul Sewald. I had Corbin Young on when I do my, like you do the Jays with me for my previews 2 years ago when it was Sewald and Muñoz. Corbin told me this is how they're going to utilize it. It was almost to a T if you watch the entire season. Sewald was the primary closer. Muñoz was the strikeout guy. So Muñoz would pitch the ninth in need of like high leverage. I need strikeouts. Otherwise, it was Sewald. We're seeing that this year. Muñoz is pitching the high leverage when they need the strikeouts. You're getting Stanek. You're getting other guys in the end. Maybe that changes when Matt Brash comes out. But that's my two cents on this. What do you have on Andrés Muñoz on the panic meter side of things?
Like you said, it's what we're expecting. Is it ideal? No. It would be very nice if all 30 teams just had one closer and committees didn't exist for our purposes. But he still has a couple saves already. He's got two saves and a win. It's hard to really complain that much. I don't like the walk rate being 20%. That's disgusting. But we're talking about seven innings. The usage is what I was expecting. You're still probably going to get 25 saves, five wins out of him, and 36%, 37% strikeout rate. I think we're totally fine there. Another guy that if people want to get rid of him, by all means, I think that that's still something that's pretty interesting. You know, all these relievers, they don't necessarily have to be just giving you, you know, you're not going to get five saves a week out of these guys like you'd hope for. Even if there's a week where Muñoz gives you four innings, eight strikeouts, zero on the ERA, zero on the whip, potentially a win or a save tossed in, you'll take that in pretty much every format.
Yep, Muñoz is still very valuable, even though he's not getting the saves right now. We completely agree on that one. O'Neill Cruz, I actually expected more people to mention him. I think he's only mentioned like twice. I was kind of surprised here. Basically, one of the highest, like, quickest surgers on draft day over spring training, because it seemed like every time you turned your head, he hit a piss missile out to right field somewhere. But O'Neill Cruz hitting .234, three homers, one steal, near 40% strikeout rate. That ain't going to cut it. And then when you look at it, though, like an almost 7% barrel rate, you'd hope for more, but a 53% hard hit rate, that's good. So what are your thoughts here on O'Neill Cruz? 62% ground ball rate ain't going to cut it either. So there's a lot of like, okay, this is cool. There's a lot of like, oh boy, we need to take a step back and look at things. So how would you assess O'Neill Cruz right now?
I think he's a guy who's going to run hot and cold, and this is just one of those stretches for him. Already having three homers and a stolen base at this point of the season is actually not too shabby at all. Yep. There's a lot worse out there. Let me tell you, there's a lot worse. I think it's something where there's just really no need to panic. The batting average is about roughly where you'd expect it to be. It's going to be in the 230 to 250 type of range, and he's going to have probably 25 homers and 20 steals at the end of the day. That's what you paid for. That's what you're going to get. If you're expecting more than that, I think that you're misguided in your assessment of him, because that's probably, I mean, you can shoot for the moon and think that he's going to go 30-30, but you can't expect it. You can hope for it. But in reality, I think he's doing what I expected him to do. The strikeouts are brutal, but it's a small enough sample size where I'm willing to lean into the track record and say he's probably closer to like, you know, a 27 to 30 range, and not something like, nobody is going to carry a 39% K rate. It just doesn't happen unless your name is Joey Gallo, right? So I wouldn't expect that to continue to that degree for O'Neill Cruz.
Yep, I'm with you. If it gets like so bad that he might find Triple A, I don't think it's going to happen either. I'm not going to say that. I'd be shocked if he would.
Yeah,
sure. But what you said early on is he's going to be streaky. It's who he is. It's what his player profile is. Just like Elliot De La Cruz.
Yep.
Elliot's going to be streaky as hell. Like, he's on fire right now. Elliot will slump, and you're going to watch baseball Twitter go, what are we doing? Should we? That's what these type of profiles do. They're going to run so hot and so cold. So like on a roto format, just, you know, quote unquote, trust the process. Just you want that end of season stat line. head to head, big pain in the butt. Big pain in the butt. Yeah. So that's kind of the best way to say it. You're not cutting O'Neal Cruz. You're pretty much starting him because he does have that skill set that the moment you bench him for the week, you're going to pay a premium for what took place on that field.
Yeah.
Aaron Judge, people are panicking because 183 average, three homers. Outside of that, a lot of the profile stuff looks kind of similar. Like the hard hit and barrel rates are down, but he's also popping out a lot. It's kind of a weird profile. I think he might still be a little banged up personally, but what's your thoughts on Aaron Judge?
Even during a terrible, terrible stretch for him, he still hit three homers in 19 games, 18% walk rate, and a 110 WRC plus. He's just a special player. Like, even at his worst, he's still better than so many players. He burned my team yesterday in the ninth inning. Everybody was dancing on his grave after he struck out in the ninth, or no, in the eighth. People are assuming he's done for the series. He goes 0-for-12, and then he came back to bite us in the ass, and that's what he'll do, right? He's another guy, one of those players who will be streaky, but when he gets hot, it's like a whole other level.
Yeah,
for him, he'll hit like 10 home runs in a week, or he'll hit 8 home runs in a week, and it's just absolutely absurd. I think he's still that guy. I worry a little bit about the speed. I don't think that he's going to be running at all. Like, we might actually end up seeing a zero in his stolen base column at the end of the year. Maybe it's one, maybe it's two, but you're not getting much there. But other than that, I think that he's still pretty damn safe, and having Juan Soto right there beside you in that lineup just makes it all the more enticing for him. I worry a little bit that he's not 100% healthy, but there's nothing to do with him. And he's another player where you're not cutting him, you're not benching him, you're not selling low. You just got to ride it out.
Yeah, as long as he's healthy, you're going. Or as long as he's in the lineup, not even healthy, as long as he's in the lineup, you roll with Aaron Judge. Sedan Rafaela, he got paid, so I don't think that's going to take him away from the big club anytime soon. But it's been rough. 155 average, no homers, one steal. He actually is up to 161 because he went 1-for-4 on Thursday. You look at his profile, like barrel rates up, hard hit rates down. The one that stands out to me besides the just drop in BABIP is, and this is why he's dropping in BABIP, line drive rate went from 27 to 19. Ground ball rate went from 42 to 29. Fly ball rate went from 31 to 52. He's elevating the ball too much when it comes to Sedan Rafaela. So, and he's not even elevating in a good way, obviously. It's more just, you know, routine fly balls probably, if you look at his profile, which takes away from the barrels and everything else. So what's your thoughts on Rafaela, who the Red Sox are trying to play anywhere they can play him? So that's a good sign in my book, and they just paid him.
I think it's a good sign that they're trying to play him, but I think it's actually a detriment to a young player to have them playing a bunch of different positions.
I agree.
It just puts their focus all over the place. We saw this with Andrew Vaughn, you know, in Chicago for a couple of years there. They, because of Jose Abreu was blocking him in his natural position at first, they put him in the outfield. He looked terrible. With Rafaela, just pick a spot and keep him there, in my opinion. Like, yes, I agree. Like, they gave him the money and they're using him all over the place, which is a good sign for his playing time going forward. But his development might be hindered if he's trying to learn three different positions at the major league level, three premium positions, center field and the two up the middle positions. Like, that's no joke. I think they got to pick one spot and let him stay there. I don't think that we really have to worry necessarily about cutting him, because I think that, you know, based on the money they gave him, he's going to be in the lineup pretty much every single day. That eligibility is really nice. Shortstop and outfield at the moment. He'll probably end up getting second base at some point as well. So I would give him more time. He's firmly on the bench, but I think to cut him would probably be a mistake. You could still end up getting 15 and 20 out of him if things break right. It's a great home park. It's a decent lineup around him. I think he could still be a good asset, but I just pick a spot and keep him there, in my opinion.
I don't disagree with that. I'm a firm believer on stop messing with these young players' ability to get comfortable in the big league level. And I would try to bench him. It'd be tough for me to cut Rafaela, but I'm, again, also biased. I love the overall profile of the kid. Jazz Chisholm, I could just keep this as simple as, is he healthy? Yes. Then you keep him in your lineup. That's kind of where I'm at. Like, his batting average is down, but everything else you look at is pretty darn groovy when it comes to Jazz Chisholm. So I have nothing else to say unless you do.
Yeah, the batting average is down just a little bit, though. 230, yeah. We're only really expecting like 250. He's got two homers, four steals. I love him. He's one of my highest shared players this year. I'm a big, 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 big fan. I couldn't say big enough times there. I love him. Yeah.
As long as he's healthy, the dude's a freaking beast, and he's playing like it, even though the average is down. So I have zero concerns.
Yeah.
Rafael Devers hitting a .188, two homers. Now he has an MRI on a messed up knee. He's supposedly day to day. That result came back. He has the shoulder issue he's been dealing with. I think he just needs to go on the IL for like 3 weeks and get healthy. That's his biggest problem to me. But you're not cutting Rafael Devers.
No, no. He's one of those guys I alluded to when I mentioned J-Rod and his struggles earlier. You're not cutting him and Turner from last year. Devers could struggle for 4 months and you wouldn't cut him.
Yep.
Now, they announced today that he wouldn't go on the injured list, which I was kind of surprised about. Cora said that he doesn't think he'll need a trip to the IL. I kind of agree with you that he probably needs a bit of a reset there. He's looked pretty dreadful, batting .288, only two homers. Again, like there's nothing you can do here except kind of just hope and pray. If he's in the lineup for the Red Sox that day, he's got to be in your lineup. Now, setting him into your weekend lineup, you know, if you're listening to this tonight or Friday morning, setting your weekend lineups, I think he's probably a sit for this weekend.
Yes,
but I don't think that you can really do anything else besides that and then hope that you can slot him back in on Monday. But even that, you know, Monday to Thursday next week could be in question depending on what the reports are.
Yep, 100% in agreement on that one. Mitch Garver hitting .160 with one home run on the season. 3% barrel rate, 34% hard hit rate, not ideal. For me, what a lot of it is I think his back's still messed up that he tweaked earlier in the season. So it's another one of those that I think he is a guy playing hurt, basically.
Yeah, I think in a one catcher league, I don't know that he's somebody that I'm really going to be that attached to. I think you can probably move on. I like the fact that he's not somebody that they're going to ask to catch very much, if really at all. I don't know if he'll even catch at all this year. So you're going to get probably more plate appearances than you would from the average catcher or catcher eligible player. But I mean, it's definitely been a little bit concerning. It's not a good park to hit into. They've kind of struggled as a team though. Once the team starts picking it up, I think that it'll kind of reflect on everybody. He's in usually a fairly premium spot in that order, 4 through 6. I'm not sure about the injury concern, honestly. I really haven't dug into that part of it so much, if he's still hurt or not. I think in two catcher leagues, though, you're probably still holding on.
Probably. 15s for sure, 12s, yeah, most likely. He's just one of those guys that's close. Like, if we get that run where, like, a Yainer Diaz and a couple other dudes come up, then Garver might hit the chopping block. Now, I don't know if there's a whole lot of that this year from the minor league system, but that's where he'd be on the way out type situation.
Yeah.
Chaz McCormick, it's been a dud of a season, .216 average, no homers, one steal, has zero barrels on the season. But he's also walking a ton most of his career in a small sample size. He's popping out a lot. I think he's close. I'm biased, though. I love Chaz McCormick. And as long as he's playing in that lineup, I'm very optimistic on his skill set. But I could be wrong. So what's your thoughts on Chaz?
Yeah, no, I bought in pretty heavily. He was like outfielder 2, outfielder 3 on a lot of my teams this year. Probably waited a little bit too long, just thinking about it from that perspective. But I have a lot of Chaz McCormick. I'm not really that concerned. I think that the playing time is going to be there where it wasn't as much last season. You know, he's already been banged up a little bit this year, which is not something I want to see. But I think the skill set's fine. I think that, you know, he'll still end up giving you close to a 2020 season. I wouldn't be cutting him yet.
Yep. Bryson Stott, he's hitting .237 on the season, which is a bummer, but his plate discipline's fine, walking more than normal, kind of similar to Chaz. One homer and 3 steals, so he's running like you want from Bryson Stott. As a whole, like, his quality of contact metrics are pretty similar. What's your thoughts on Stott so far? Because as long as he's playing in Philly, I'm not overly concerned.
Yeah, another guy that I bought into pretty heavily. I don't love that he's batting 7th or 8th as opposed to 5th or 6th, but I think that lineup just needs to heat up as a whole and he'll be fine. I'm still trusting the process from the offseason. You know, and last year he was so good, 15 and 30, .280 batting average. It's good counting stats for the position. You know, another guy, like, he's getting dropped. He's actively getting dropped every day on leagues I see on Yahoo. He's down 2% today from yesterday, down to 85. I would pick him up if he's out there.
Yep, I'm with you. He's going to run, like we were both saying. He's maybe not hitting for average, but one homer and 3 steals. That's like right in line, if not maybe ahead of what we want from him throughout the whole season. Yeah. For Brian Hayes, no homers, no steals, .277 average, and now a back injury. What's our thought? Like, we've seen these injuries from Hayes in his career. It's always kind of set things back for him. It's a tough drop, I'll say that much, but definitely concerning.
The nature of third base right now, I wrote up Anthony Rendon as a pickup last night, and I had to, like, you know, check myself. I couldn't even believe that I was writing it. But
make sure there's water in your cup.
That's where we are at this point with the position. They're dropping like flies. We lost Berger. You know, there's just a lot of players that are out. So, I mean, this might be a situation where he misses time, he has to go on the injured list. If it's only a 10-day stint, I think you got to keep him, though. He hasn't been that great. He's batting 277, which is fine, but he hasn't hit a home run. He hasn't stolen a base. It's not great. And I think, like, 10-team leagues, you could probably cut him, but I think most of the time I'm still going to be holding on until we at least get an update. If this back injury is serious, then sure, he's a cut. But I think in most cases, I'm holding on for now.
Yep, yep. I'm holding as long as I can, because the fact he's hitting for average keeps me optimistic. And he's the plate, like the walk rates and everything. I'm gonna hang on as long as possible on this one.
Yeah,
almost done here. Hunter Brown. It's been a dreadful. 10.54 ERA, 5.13 xFIP. It's an improvement, but still not great. Strikeouts aren't there right now. He's walking a ton of people. It's been all over the farm when it comes to Hunter Brown. So how are you feeling on the youngster who, not good.
He dropped me single-handedly from 3rd to 14th in ERA in tout. Just one start. It was brutal stuff. I bought in a lot. He was somebody I wrote up several times in the offseason as a buy-in. You know, he had a ERA above 5 last year. The supporting metrics were really good. The strikeout to walk was really good. I'm not going to throw that away just based on a few bad starts, but I'm definitely not as optimistic as I was. That's for sure. The walks are really concerning. He is allowing an astronomically high BABIP of 481. That's just like one of the highest numbers you're ever going to see. It's not going to stick, but the command has also not been there. I will say he went through 6 innings against the Braves the other night, and it wasn't great, but it was a quality start against the Braves. 2 earned runs, 6 innings, only 3 Ks and 3 walks, but you know, it's a positive sign, at least after what we saw the previous time out. I'm willing to bet on him correcting course over the course of the season. And if he's dropped, I think that he is worth a pickup. He's dropped like below 50% on Yahoo. Yes. People were like, he went from 90 to 50 in like that. It was nothing. But I think it's a little bit too reactionary. I understand it. You know, he burned you. He killed you with that start. But I wouldn't be giving up just yet.
On the bright side, he probably won't have a worse start the rest of the season.
Yeah.
That's the one angle to look at there. I'd say in 10s, he's a tough roster. 12, it's a decision. But 12s, I could kind of see both angles. 15s, you hold. You hold for now, see where things go with Hunter Brown. And the last one we have here, James Outman. 2 homers, 1 steal, 193 average. The average is less than ideal, but a lot of the other peripherals when it comes to James Outman, he's actually hitting the ball harder this year than he did last year, which is a plus. And more importantly to me with James Outman, he's playing every single day outside of a rare off day for the Los Angeles Dodgers. That right there, like, he usually plays center field versus right-handed pitching and plays a corner position versus left-handed pitching. As long as he's in that lineup, I like James Outman.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with picking him up where he's been dropped. He's been dropped a lot. People at this time of year are always, you know, just so ready to drop players, but you know, the reaction should be to hold more than to drop, I think. And Outman's just one of those examples of people, of a guy that people were just ready to move on from really quickly. They didn't give him any time. And I agree with everything you said. You know, just like what he did last year as a rookie, 23-16 in the best lineup in baseball, or at worst, the second best lineup in baseball. I mean, if he's out there, I'd be picking him up. I think that he's still going to be growing from what he did last year. Not to say that he's necessarily going to just get a bit better every year, but I think he can at least do what he did for you last year. 23-15, 250 batting average. Hold or pick up if you can find him, I think.
Yep, 100% with you. And he had a rough stretch last year. Started good, rough stretch in the middle, finished great. I'm not worried about Outman at all. But we made it, Joe. Didn't think we would to start the show, that's for sure, but we made it. Last thing I'll ask you before we head on out of here, we went through the list here, and the only ones I think we were for sure 100% cuttable was Vaughn, Meadows, Davis, Colt Keith. Everyone else is like, yeah, kind of what we both were like, yeah, yes, you could cut, maybe not type deal, but get more or less. That was the main for sure, like they need to be off your rosters. I guess my last question for you is, you mentioned kind of wait. I guess I know you said earlier, but for the listeners, when does full panic mode set in?
It depends on the player. If it's a really early pick, then it's probably not going to be for at least another month or so. I want to give them, you know, at least 200 plate appearances roughly to figure things out. if it's somebody that it's like a late round pick that I was thinking, man, maybe there's some upside here, and they've been, you know, just dragging your team down for the first couple of weeks, then I have no reason to be attached. Generally speaking, give people the month of April to figure it out. Give them at least a month, give them 150, 200 plate appearances, and then you can start making your decisions. But even at that point, you know, if you looked at Blake Snell through April last year, you might have cut him in a 10-team league. If you looked at Matt Chapman through April last year, you might have put MVP futures on him. So you don't really know what's going to happen through the month of April, but that's, I think, a good barometer for how a guy is generally doing that year.
Yep, totally agree with you on that. So hang tight, people. Take a deep breath. There are a few cuts, but most of the time it's bench or cross your fingers and pray and see where things go, because it's so, so early when all things are said and done. Joe, remind everybody where they can find you, what you got going on.
Thanks for having me, Bubba. It's always great to talk with you. You guys can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrico99. My podcast, wherever you get your shows, is Fantasy MLB Today. We go 5 days a week, Monday through Thursday, and then either Friday or Saturday, you can check that out. And then all the written work for myself and our great team is at sportsethos.com.
Yep, go check it all out. Have fun listening to Joe's show. It comes at you 5 days a week with all that fun stuff. So check that out. And as always, Joe, thanks for joining me, man. Appreciate it.
Always a great time, my friend.
All right, we covered 43 people, 43 players for y'all. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 667. Catch y'all next time.